Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome in, everybody, to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You, of course, can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. This is supposed to be March 26th or March 27th as you're listening to this. Just a random day in March. Yes, there's some league meetings. I'm thinking, you know, I go through my planning like a week in advance. All right, what are we going to be talking about next week? I've got all my ideas in my notebook of things that we can talk about. There's still a lot to go over, but I'm like, this will probably just kind of be a little bit of a slower time. What just happened? That was a very crazy 24 hours in the Packers sphere. We had rule changes. We had LaFleur and Mark Murphy speak. We've got Brazil rumors and potential possible games in Brazil. We've got Green Bay versus the Packers. That's different. We've got a new kicker. Like, there was a lot going on one random Tuesday at the end of March. So let's jump into it. Before that, thank you, Matthew, for signing up to be a Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. If you haven't done so, go do so. It's a great option. Four different tiers available. Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships. Go click it. Do it. It's great. I love you. But let's talk about everything that we have to talk about because there is a lot of it. And let's talk with Green Bay versus the Packers. The city of Green Bay on one side, the Green Bay Packers on the other. There are lease issues, stadium issues. Oh my goodness, what's going to happen? All right. As you guys probably know, I like talking football. I don't like talking politics. I don't like talking lease agreements. We're going to give a cursory glance at this because if I'm being honest, that's all that this probably really deserves at this point. All right. On its simplest terms, at its easiest exit point, this lease goes for another 9 years. 9 years. And if you're wondering what this is about, there's an article on PackersNews.com and they do an incredible job of breaking down the entire thing. If you do enjoy lease agreements and politics and city versus team and all that stuff, it's a great article. They did a phenomenal job on it and you can get all of it over there. But there is a sort of issue where the Packers wanted to get, you know, sort of redo the lease early, probably in large part due to the draft coming up and some of the renovations that they want to make and they want some assurances before doing that. But they have this lease that's already in effect and it lasts another 9 years. So they go to the city of Green Bay and they want some changes and Green Bay says no. Long story short, Green Bay, you know, proposes, or the Packers propose an offer to the city of Green Bay. The city of Green Bay says no and just basically walks away from it and says, we're good. We don't have anything else to add at this point, which leads to some angst and frustration on both sides and the Packers being upset that the city of Green Bay did not do a counteroffer and yada, yada, yada. That's where sort of things are right now. And as, like I said, at its easiest, simplest terms, the terms of the lease go at least 9 more years. And like I said, the Packers wanted a new deal. The draft is coming up. They're going to potentially do $80 million in Lambeau renovations, primarily to the lower bowl in the concourse. And the Packers are not going to do that until they get some assurances from the city of Green Bay and they get some deal worked out, etc. That's where it's at right now. And a lot of people online start to be like, all right, what's the worry here? What's the concern? Could the Packers leave Green Bay? What should the level of, you know, again, overall concern be at this point? Is there a threat? What's the threat level? The threat level for me and my interpretation of this is zero. There is no concern on anyone's end at this point that this is going to go anyway in a backwards way or that there's going to be these huge breakdowns between the city of Green Bay and the Packers or that the Packers could ultimately leave Green Bay. You should have zero fear and zero concern, especially with 9 years left to sort of get this figured out. However, what I would sort of define this as is annoying. What you don't want to hear about on any given day is a situation where the Green Bay Packers and the city of Green Bay are not on the same page, in which they're, you know, basically walking out on negotiations, in which a $80 million project that would make Lambeau Field better for upcoming seasons, for the 2025 draft, for the fans, for, you know, the economy of Green Bay and you know, work being done, that is no longer going to get done, at least at this time, and probably not in time for the draft. That's an annoyance. That's a frustration. And I think that's how I would just sort of categorize this entire situation right now. Am I worried that the Packers are going to be in this terrible spot, or that they're not going to be able to put on the draft, or that Lambeau Field's going to be in this terrible situation? No, I'm not worried about any of that. Am I worried that the city of Green Bay is going to lose the Packers, or that it's going to end up being this big issue down the road? No, I'm not really concerned about that either. Am I just kind of annoyed by the entire thing? Yeah. Is it frustrating and stupid? Yeah. Do I wish that the Packers and the city of Green Bay could just sit down at a table, get it ironed out and figured out? Yeah. And do I wish all the renovations could just take place on time and the draft would go off without a hitch, and meaning everything would be done in time? Yeah, that would be nice. But these things happen. We're not talking a $20 million contract here. We're talking of hundreds of millions and billions of dollars that are going to change hands in projects and events that will take place at Lambeau Field. We are talking a whole level of money well beyond what, let's just say, we normally talk about here on the Packaday podcast. These are extreme situations, extreme negotiations, extreme amounts of money. And everyone's favorite word gets to come to the forefront again: leverage. And right now, with this Press Gazette article, this PackersNews.com article, and the mayor of Green Bay putting out his response and giving, you know, his quotes to the article and his take on it, and with Mark Murphy talking at the owner's meeting and giving his take on it, what's really being used as leverage right now is us, is people, is the people in Green Bay, is the people that are fans of the Green Bay Packers. And a lot of diehard Packer fans, I'm sure, are going to go and say, what the heck, city of Green Bay, what are you doing? Mayor, you want to keep your job and get reelected, get this done. The Packers are everything. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if you're just a citizen of Green Bay, maybe the Packers aren't that big of a deal and you just kind of want things to go as normal, you might be like, yep, screw the Packers. I don't care about the Packers. But the people here are the ones that are sort of being used as leverage. And it's a war for popular opinion. And as a mayor of Green Bay, if things start, and the Packers know this, if things start swaying in one direction where everyone's mad at the city of Green Bay and mad at the mayor, that's probably not a great look for him. So this is just leverage negotiation. It's annoying. Would I like it just to be done and over with and everything hunky-dory and we don't have to worry about it, kumbaya, etc.? Yeah, that would, like I said, that'd be pretty nice. Would I like that $80 million project to Lambeau Field to get done like now? Yeah, that'd be great. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not concerned about anything, nor should you. Check out the article on Packers.com if you want all the details and minutia about it. But I think that's all that needs to be said. It's a disagreement. It's a negotiation. It's a leverage tactic. We'll all, I'm sure, get sucked into it more as time goes on. If there are future issues down the line where there seems to be real, legitimate, extreme tension between the city of Green Bay and the Packers, and more, you know, let's just say, terse actions get taken, we'll talk about it. But even Mark Murphy in his owner's meetings comment says, they're going to get something done. They're going to stay in Green Bay. They're going to be the Green Bay Packers. This stuff just happens. It just happens. It's kind of all there is to it. And I think that's all I really have to say about it. So don't be nervous. Don't be, you know, concerned. Don't be, and if you want to be frustrated with the city of Green Bay, if you want to be frustrated with the Packers, my really elementary read on it, and this is all I'll just care to say on it, and we'll end with this. My elementary read on it is, I can see both sides. If this was a new negotiation, like the lease was coming to an end, I would probably be more on the Packer side, just being like, yeah, city of Green Bay, you probably just need to get this done. It's the Green Bay Packers. You're going to lose this argument. Like, you're just going to lose it. The Packers are going to win and you're going to lose. The fact that there's so much time left on the lease agreement, and it's an agreement that both sides entered into in good faith, that they would see the agreement through. If the Green Bay Packers are going to go to the city of Green Bay and ask for something, like want a new agreement, you can't go and say, hey, we want to tear up the agreement, we want a new one, and we want everything to be better in our favor. And that's just, again, my very elementary read of it. And based on that and kind of how I read it, like I said, if it was a brand new negotiation and the lease was set to be up and they had to get a deal done, I would be siding with the Packers probably more on this. I can understand Green Bay saying, like, we've kind of got a 9-year deal here, at least. Like, if we want to renegotiate at the end of this and you want things better on your terms, all right, we can talk more at that point. But to come to us with 9 years left and say you want a more beneficial deal after we've already come to an agreement on this deal, kind of, again, my initial read on it is I kind of side a little bit more with the city of Green Bay, where I kind of get where they're coming from. Ultimately, I don't care. It'll get done. It'll get fixed. And if you want to be on one side or the other, be my guest. The world is your oyster. I don't have a major disagreement with any of you, and I can understand where you would take one side or the other. They'll get something done. It'll be probably later rather than sooner, which is the sucky part, but that is where we're going to leave it. And we're going to move on to a bunch of the other topics that we have to talk about, which are, quite frankly, a lot more fun than lease negotiations. Let's talk about the Packers potentially playing in frickin' Brazil, because that's an interesting conversation as well. This is one of those that's sort of like super cool and also sort of makes you anxious, all rolled into one little fun ball. It's really cool because Packers, Brazil, Friday night football, starting the season, international game, tons of flair and excitement. That sounds pretty awesome. And I know there is a huge contingency of Packer fans in Brazil that are geeking out about the possibility. And just to sort of do a quick get up to speed here, it was announced on Tuesday, and we already knew that the Philadelphia Eagles would be having the international game in Brazil, and it would be one of their home games, but we didn't know who would be going to Brazil to face the Philadelphia Eagles. And on Tuesday, it was narrowed down to two teams, the Cleveland Browns and your Green Bay Packers. So now we know it's a coin flip. And when Mark Murphy was asked about it, he said at the very end of his interview today, he said it's going to be, he thought it would be 50-50, that it could be the Packers or it could be the Browns. Now, like I said, the cool thing is game in Brazil, Friday night, like there's a lot to really like about it. And I would really be excited for the Brazil fans. On the flip side, starting off your season in the very first week of the year with a massive trip to Brazil, you know, you don't want to add mileage and flight time and just sort of any variable to the entire process. I am sure that if you ask Matt LaFleur and the coaching staff and the front office and everyone, hey, would you rather play Philadelphia in Brazil or Philly? It's a really interesting question because on the one hand, it will probably be at least 50-50, if not probably a home game for the Packers if you go to Brazil and do it. So you do have that going for you, but it is an extremely long trip and you're going to play in week 2. You're not going to have a week 2 bye. You do get a couple extra days off, you know, because you're going to play Friday instead of Sunday. Maybe if the league was awesome, they would give Green Bay a Monday night game the following week. But again, that sort of disjoints your entire rhythm as well, rather than just starting to get on that Sunday schedule. But you could probably live with it a little bit more earlier in the season. But man, overall, I would probably choose Philly. But then again, Philly's not an easy place to play either. So I guess flip a coin here too as to what you would ultimately want. This is another one. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being middle of the ground Andy today and not taking a side either way. I can understand both sides. If you're excited about the Packers playing in Brazil and you want them to go in Brazil and have this Friday night opener and have it not be in Philadelphia, so it's like a true road game, I get it. I totally get it. If you're like, hey, I think the travel is going to be a lot of wear and tear, and that's probably not the way that you want to start the season, and probably rather just have a home game or like a road game in the continental United States, I understand that too. But it will be a very interesting decision one way or the other. It sounds like we will know by the end of this week. Mark Murphy did bring up a very interesting point where, you know, if you're in Chicago, right, if it's the Bears or if you're the Browns, probably, you can probably fly right out of Cleveland, right out of Chicago, right out of, you know, the Eagles can probably fly right out of Philly and take a direct flight right to Sao Paulo. And for the Packers, it's not that easy. There's no international airport. As Mark Murphy mentioned, the runways are different. We'll have to ask Tyler Herrick what that exactly means as to why the runway really matters. I'm assuming bigger plane doesn't handle an airport in Green Bay would be my guess. But it sounds like there's some potential where they would have to bus down to Milwaukee. I don't get why they wouldn't fly to Milwaukee and then fly from Milwaukee to Brazil. But either way, there are a few more logistical issues. It does seem like for a team from Green Bay flying international to Brazil than it would be for some of the other teams. My gut feel here is that the Browns are the ones that end up with this game, and it ends up being Philly-Cleveland Friday Night Football. But I wouldn't be shocked if it was Green Bay. And again, how your feelings on that are may vary, and I get it. If it were my choice, I think I'd say just not play in Brazil, I guess, because I do think that wear and tear does take its toll, but I wouldn't be upset by it. And there would be certain levels that I would be excited if they did go to Brazil. I do think I would try to find a way to go to Brazil, but man, that flight pattern and that flight expense, not super easy. Just a reminder, as a something totally off topic, no correlation, make sure to become a Packaday Podcast YouTube member. But anyway, let's move on. What a phenomenal weekend of college basketball. And hopefully you, like me, enjoyed your experience even more by using Prize Picks. If you didn't, well, what are you waiting for? Right now, you can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with your college basketball entries today. And it doesn't stop there. They have all sorts of entries available, including NBA, NHL, and so many more. Testing my skills on Prize Picks has been the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports, especially during March Madness. It's extremely simple to play, and they even have super fun promotions available like their Taco Tuesday, where select player projections are discounted up to 25% to provide even more value and excitement. They also have incredibly easy withdrawals, and for those of you that utilize Apple Pay, you can use it for quick and easy deposits into your account. College basketball is always fun this time of year, but it was so much more fun this past weekend with Prize Picks. I'll be sticking with Caitlin Clark this week and probably adding a few NBA selections as well, especially with the return of Chris Middleton to the Bucks. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hello, friends. If you're like me, you've been in numerous ticket situations that were just flat out frustrating. Recently, I had tickets to a Bucks game and I could not locate the tickets that were allegedly sent to me. It ended up in a huge hassle and led to me being completely frustrated by the entire experience. Ticket purchases should not be that difficult, and thankfully, they don't have to be. Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all sports, music, comedy, and theater events near you. With killer last-minute deals and their lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying tickets. I'm already eyeing up Bucks playoff tickets, and I know I'll be purchasing them through Game Time. My experience with Game Time has been simple, seamless, and completely without hassle. No more frustration, no more awful last-minute customer service phone calls, just easy access to great tickets. My favorite aspect of Game Time is their last-minute deals. You can save up to 60% off by buying last-minute tickets, and save even more with exclusive in-app deals on select seats ahead of the big game. And best of all, it's all covered with their low price guarantee. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, PACKADAY, for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. Packers sign a new kicker. This is another interesting one. Greg Joseph, former Vikings kicker, former Titans kicker, former Browns kicker, is a new Green Bay Packer. This probably would have led off if the Packers get a new kicker on some episodes at the end of March. But today, it's number 3 on the list. Greg Joseph is an interesting signing. Let's run through his stats really quick first. And if they are underwhelming, you're right. They are very underwhelming. In 2023, Joseph was 80% on field goals, 24 out of 30. On field goals under 40 yards, he was 17 of 17. From 40 to 49, he was only 50%, 3 of 6. And from 50 plus, he was 4 of 7. So it was 7 of 13 on 40 yard or longer field goals. He had a long of 54 and was 36 of 38 on extra points. That was this past year. So 80% on field goals, 36 of 38 on extra points. In 2022, he was only 78.8% on field goals and missed 6 extra points. Not great. In 2021 was his best season. He had an 86.8% field goal percentage, but still missed 4 extra points. In 2020, he did not play. 2019, he played in only 2 games, was 9 for 9 on extra points, did not take any field goals. And in 2018, he made 85% of his field goals, also missed four extra points. He's a very underwhelming kicker in every sense. He's got a big leg, very inconsistent, very inaccurate, especially from 40 plus. 40 and under, he's pretty accurate. Like he's very, very accurate, but most kickers are, let's just be honest. That 40 to 49 range is where you really want to up that accuracy. The 50 plus, you're willing to have a little bit more forgiveness for. Those are tough field goals. But the other thing for Greg Joseph is his past couple seasons, he was in Minnesota. He was in a dome the vast majority of the time, and he still struggled. And if you want to look at his lifetime at Lambeau Field, you might want to look away there too. He was 3 for 7 lifetime at Lambeau Field, including just 2 of his last 6 and 1 of 3 this past season. Now, Green Bay gets him on a 1 year, a little bit less than $1.3 million deal. I'm assuming in all likelihood, there's very little guarantees here. This will be a kicking competition though, between Greg Joseph and Anders Carlson. Now, if I were betting, I'm probably going like 90-10 that this is probably Anders Carlson, but this is definitely a lot different than Jack Podlesny, which by the way, probably not a great day for Jack Podlesny. Sorry, Jack, kind of sucks that you're just never really got your chance. I don't think they're going to keep 3 kickers on the roster, but with Greg Joseph coming in, this is a legitimate competition and this should legitimately push Anders Carlson. If Greg Joseph is just the better kicker come the end of camp and Anders has a bad camp, I do believe Greg Joseph will be your kicker. I don't believe that this is just some, random kicker signing that we're going to be like, yeah, hey, look, you got competition. You better step your game up, but we're probably going to keep you no matter what. I don't think this is that. I think this is a message to Anders Carlson that he's going to have to kick for his job. And I do think Greg Joseph will give him a legitimate run in preseason and in training camp and in mini camp to go through all of this and really give Anders a run for his money. And the hope here, by the way, not just for the Packers, but for fans should be as well, is that Anders Carlson just goes out and wins the job. That should be the hope. If Anders wins the job and can become that long-term kicker for Green Bay, that's the benefit here. That's the plus side. So the hope here is that Greg lights a fire under Anders. Anders comes in motivated, kicks better than ever, finds his accuracy, and you're good, and you just hopefully have your kicker for the next decade. But this does give Green Bay an option. If Anders comes in and is completely inconsistent once again, and you have no faith that you can go into games and trust what he's going to do, I guess there's at least a hope that maybe Greg Joseph does find some of that accuracy. Sometimes kickers just find it. Sometimes they need a new coordinator. Maybe Rich Bisaccia and Greg Joseph can figure it out. Who knows? But this does feel like a legitimate competition. If you're slightly underwhelmed, like I said, I get it. Greg Joseph is not probably the savior at kicker that maybe people were hoping for, but it is legitimate competition and may the best man win. If it's Greg Joseph, so be it. The hope is that it's Anders, that this is exactly what he needs and Anders can become the long-term kicker in Green Bay. But now we've got the competition and we can actually go and find out. Next up, we've got new kick return rules. This is another fun conversation. I saw a lot of people upset with, I think, just more the change of the rules than anything. I don't totally understand why. I will say this. I will readily admit this. When you watch the XFL kickoff rule, which is basically what this is, it does feel like a little Cracker Jack boxy. What I mean by that is like, it just feels a little circusy. It feels a little, I don't know. It feels a little XFL-y. It doesn't feel like NFL is always, wants to be sort of like buttoned up and professional and we're not going to try a ton of gimmicks with stuff. It feels a little gimmicky, right? I will readily admit that. If you're looking at it, like it feels weird for like any sort of traditionalist that's been watching the kicker put his hands up and kick the ball off and into the end zone. And you've got your usual formation of returners that we've seen forever. For our entire lives, we've seen kickoffs one way. I readily admit that this feels different. It feels weird. It feels not quite NFL Shield brand-ish. It feels a little bit XFL-y, which it was. That being said, if you really look at the numbers, if you really look at what it's trying to accomplish, it makes all the sense in the world. They are trying to accomplish 2 very direct things all at once that are, quite frankly, very difficult to accomplish all at once. They are trying to make a kickoff that is still exciting, but is also safe. They're trying to make a play that isn't just a kick out of the end zone. It's a nothing play, but they're also still trying to make it safe. Those are two very difficult things to accomplish. And credit the XFL. They found a way to do it. They legitimately created a rule, created a kickoff that would make it so that the kicker had to return it most of the time. That gave every incentive to the kickoff team to kick it to the returner. That gave every incentive to the returner to actually take it out and return it, and made it so that it was much, much safer because you don't have these huge collisions from guys running, you know, 4.240s at 280 pounds, you know, directly at each other at full force. So yeah, this is beneficial in a few different ways. One is player safety. Concussions were way down. The rate of injuries were way down in the XFL with this type of return. And more importantly, only 22% of kicks were returned last year. What we saw consistently and constantly was a play that no longer mattered. It was just a ball kicked out of the end zone, and you might as well have just eliminated it from the game entirely. This is a last-ditch effort to try to save the kick return and the kickoff. And I appreciate that. And I do think there's going to be a great deal of strategy that's involved with this. And I saw some people say, because they changed the rule, I'm not going to go through the full minutia of the rule. You can find it in a million different places online or videos of it on YouTube if you want. But like I said, they have incentivized the returner. I saw some people say that they changed it to the 30-yard line instead of the 35 if it's kicked through the end zone. And now teams are just going to kick it through the end zone. There is the possibility where if we start seeing return touchdown rates or teams returning it to the other side of the field with any level of consistency, then yes, we're going to see teams just try to kick it out of the end zone and get it at the 30 rather than the 25. We could potentially see that, and then it ends up not making that much of a change. In Green Bay, where some of the weather gets tough to actually kick those out of the end zone, that could be a little bit of a different story. But what we saw, and my ultimate answer to this is, what we saw these past couple seasons with the implementation of the kickoff rules that they already did with the touchback being to the 25, we saw a lot of teams, including the Packers, that did not want to kick it to the end zone, that were basically kicking it to the 1 yard line, trying to force teams to return because they thought they could cover the kick and get them down prior to the 25 and actually save yardage for their defense. And if that was at the 25, I have to think that at the 30-yard line, that's probably going to remain pretty consistent. Like, they're going to try to get them down inside the 30. I don't think that teams are going to, especially going into the season, just concede every time we kick off, you can have it at the 30-yard line. I really don't think that's going to be the case. Now, again, if we see a huge league-wide change where teams are returning for touchdowns at an absurd level, or getting to the other side of the field at an absurd level, the average kick return is above the 30, then analytically, yeah, they're going to try to kick it out of the end zone. And they're just going to say, screw this, take it at the 30, we'll be fine, and we'll just play on defense. Or you could have situations where maybe teams that have really great kick returners, like a Keyshawn Nixon, maybe teams say, hey, we just don't want to kick to that guy. Maybe you have a little Devin Hester effect where teams, when they play those teams, will kick it out of the end zone and say, we're not kicking to him. You can take it at the 30. But I think far more often than not, we are going to see returns. And I will be shocked if that 22% kick return rate does not go well, well, well above 50% and skyrocket to a very high level. My guess is it's above 75, 80%, maybe even more than that this upcoming season. That would be my guess. But there's going to be a lot more strategy. I'm excited for it. And from a Packers standpoint, Keyshawn Nixon, that's a good thing right now. Now, on the flip side, Green Bay's been bad at covering everything for the past, I don't know, ever. So you have to worry about, you know, more kick returns on the other side as well. That's going to be something that this team has to take into consideration and how they put a kickoff coverage team together. And Rich Bisacci is going to have to earn his money there. But from a Keyshawn Nixon standpoint, very excited. Now, Mark Murphy did vote against the rule change. He was one of only three teams that voted against adopting the new kick return rules. And when asked why that was, I thought maybe he was just going to be like, listen, we suck at special teams for forever. We just want to abolish special teams altogether. I'm saying this very tongue in cheek mostly. But he basically said what he wanted was a 1 year preseason trial rather than what's a one-year regular season and preseason trial. So this is a one-year trial only. They're going to do it in 2024 and then reevaluate in 2025. But it will go through the season. Like I said, Mark Murphy wanted it just for the preseason and then reevaluate after, you know, in next year's offseason meetings. But instead, it is adopted. He did seem excited about the Keyshawn Nixon factor, and Green Bay will be like every other team, and this will be something that they're going to have to get used to. There were a couple other rule changes as well. Oh, actually, before we get there, one other thing. The onside kick. This is a major change as well. First of all, there are no more surprise onside kicks. You can't start a Super Bowl with a surprise onside kick. You can't do a surprise onside kick ever. In fact, you can't do any onside kick within the first three quarters of the game. I know I saw some people online say like, well, you just have to declare it. No, in the first three quarters of the game, you cannot do an onside kick. And in the fourth quarter of the game, you can only do an onside kick if one, you declare it, and two, you're the losing team. And not that the team ahead was probably going to do an onside kick anyway in that situation, but only the losing team in a fourth quarter can do an onside kick. That's it. And they are still developing the rules on this. So we'll see what the, you know, overtime, I don't know what it's, but it's probably just going to be fourth quarter, right? I don't think there'd be a situation in overtime where you would do it. Only fourth quarter when you're losing are you capable, and it will follow the same onside kick rules that they already have. So it'll be just like it was before. And I'm totally fine with that, by the way. First of all, the onside kick recovery rate is completely down, and I'm also fine with that. Let the team that's winning continue to win rather than try to get the ball back on an onside kick. Wish it was that way in 2014. Totally cool with it being that way moving forward. Here's the ultimate thing, right? We want to see exciting football plays. And yes, an onside kick recovery can have some level of an excitement to it because it gives you the ability to get the ball back. But we want to see playmakers with the ball in their hands. You know, whether that is on a kick return or on big pass plays or run plays or interceptions, we want to see those sort of plays. That's what we want to see in the game. Touchdowns, explosive plays, not a ball being kicked off a tee in a weird direction and getting a weird bounce. And I don't know. It's just not for me. I'm cool with the onside kick being mostly out of the game, save for when you're down in the fourth quarter. And even those are getting recovered at an obscenely low rate. Overall, I like these changes, and I think it's going to be a positive. And if it's not, if it turns out being terrible, well, it's just for 1 year, and they can reevaluate it in 2025. Other rule changes, the trade deadline has moved from week 8 to week 9, 1 week later. A little bit of fun revisionist history of like, if the Packers with Rasul Douglas would have had one more week, would they have still traded him? I don't know, probably, but that's an interesting discussion. But I like it being 1 week later. What I think you can have happen is maybe potentially a couple more teams sort of fall into that status of not being in the wild card race, and that can open up some more teams being willing to trade. With the 7 wild card teams, or the 7 playoff teams, I should say, and a 7th wild card, or you get my point, a 3rd wild card team, 7th playoff team total in each conference, you ended up with so many teams, because 14 teams make the playoffs, and like you ended up last year where like 26 of those teams were in it up until like the last couple weeks. So it's only if you start like, you know, even at week 9, if you're, you have to basically be like 2-7 or worse to sort of feel like, all right, we're sellers at the trade deadline. But in week 8, it was really hard because even if you were, you know, some teams had buys by that time already, you might have only been, because I think like Green Bay was what, like 2-5, right? So, you know, you might, in Green Bay obviously did make a comeback this past year. So I don't know. Like, I think the week 9 is a lot better. It should hopefully add maybe a couple teams that are actually willing to trade and be out of it so that more teams can, you know, more players can be available and more teams can actually make trades. The bigger one, the rule change that I really, really love is that they changed the rule that they are now allowing you 2 of your IR return players to be designated prior to cutdowns. So if you remember, if you put a player previously, if you put a player on injured reserve prior to cutdowns, they were out for the year no matter what. You could not bring them back. So any IR player during or before final cutdowns, done for the season. And what ended up happening is if you wanted to have any player like Luke Tenuta for last season, for example, They put him on the active roster with the hope that he'd be able to come back at some time. They had to keep him on the initial 53-man roster, then put him on injured reserve, and then open up that spot and bring somebody back from the roster and or claim somebody or whatever. They had to do it that way. And it just makes it so that all these additional players are, you know, need to get released rather than just being able to stay on the roster. And then you, when you release them, you subject them to waivers, et cetera. But now what you can do is designate two of those players for return from injured reserve prior to cutdowns. So you can put them on IR and designate them to return prior to cutdowns, which gives you the additional flexibility, not having to keep them on the active 53-man roster and already being able to put them on IR, still being able to bring them back and giving you more flexibility at cutdown time. That makes a ton of sense. And then the last one, there are a couple other minor ones that we don't need to even need to go over, but you now have the ability to elevate a third quarterback from the practice squad as many times as you want. That emergency third quarterback, you can pull up a quarter, because remember, there's a limited amount of times that you can call players up from the practice squad. Now, no longer at quarterback if you're using them as the emergency third quarterback. It does say they need to be a legitimate quarterback. Not sure how they're going to like argue that. Like Malik Cunningham will be a very interesting one. Malik Cunningham, if he ends up on a practice squad, is a legitimate like quarterback slash wide receiver. I'm not sure how much it's going to matter, but could they get away with some stuff with that? I don't know, maybe. But either way, this is a smart move and gives teams the ability to bring up that extra quarterback. I do think there's an actual like kind of interesting unintended consequence here is it makes it far more likely that your third quarterback gets released and put on a practice squad rather than making the 53-man roster. And if you're a quarterback, that's not good news because the practice squad pays significantly less than a minimum salary if you are on the 53-man roster. So it is incentivizing teams to cut that quarterback and put him on the practice squad rather than the 53, which again, if you're a quarterback, you're probably not such a huge fan of that rule, but overall as a fan, it makes a ton of sense. And I think that's going to be an overall positive rule change. All right. Couple other quick things. Matt LaFleur did speak with the media as well on Tuesday. There wasn't a ton here. He was very, very excited about Josh Jacobs' versatility and the ability to use him out of the backfield as a receiver. They're very excited about that. Said that Rich Bisaccia gave a big stamp of approval on the Josh Jacobs signing, having worked with him with the Raiders previously. With Aaron Jones being gone, he also mentioned that he expects Jordan Love to take a step up in his leadership and in that locker room, being more of a presence there. Green Bay is going to lose a pretty big locker room presence. Now, they gained two former team captains in Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs already. And we know Green Bay has a very big appetite for big-time locker room guys, so they're probably going to get a few more via the draft. And if they do take a meander into free agency anymore. But Matt LaFleur basically said, Jordan Love, that's going to be the answer to that. And he's going to take on more of that leadership within the locker room. He mentioned that they are looking for more consistency from Rashid Walker. This has been a consistent message from both Brian Gutekunst, from actually, I think Adam Stenovich during the season, and from Matt LaFleur. It is very clear that they want a higher level of consistency from Rashid. I thought Rashid from the second half of the year was pretty darn good, all things considered. Of course, you would always love better consistency, but man, have they been hammering that home. There's no real competition for him right now, I don't think. We'll see what happens in the draft, but you can tell that they want another step from him and they're certainly not ready, and they've had multiple opportunities to do so. They are not ready to just anoint him the starting left tackle by any means. Same thing with Sean Ryan at right guard. I think they like both those guys, but they want both of those guys to improve before they're ready to give any, you know, full-time starting job over to them with no competition. He mentioned that Jeff Hafley and the defensive staff watched tape of Keyshawn Nixon, and they were really excited about what they saw from Keyshawn Nixon's tape, which gave the stamp of approval for Green Bay to go and give him that big contract. And of course, Keyshawn Nixon's stock even up after the kick return rule changes as well. He also made a really good point that last year at this time, from an offensive standpoint, they were trying to put together like what they wanted to do for the season, and they didn't have a team on offense. They knew Jordan Love, Aaron Jones, AJ Dillon. They knew Josiah DeGuara, Christian Watson, and Romeo Doubs, and most of their offensive line. But you have to remember, Dontavian Wicks, Jaden Reed, Luke Musgrave, Tucker Kraft, none of those guys, you know, on the roster at this time last year, Those are extremely big time contributors within their offense. Ben Sims, another one. They didn't even have those players. Emmanuel Wilson, they didn't have. So they had Sean Clifford, the backup quarterback, they didn't have. There's a lot of pieces missing as they're trying to put together a game plan for the season. They sort of had a skeleton crew to sort of work around. This year, they know what they're going to have on offense. It's probably the defense a little bit more that is probably going to get a little bit more help via the draft, you would think. But overall, Matt LaFleur knows a lot better what he's working with and is able to put together a much better plan, which should scare a lot of opposing teams because they were pretty good by the end of the year on offense last year with not having a head start. And now Green Bay gets a much better head start this season. He also mentioned he believes Jason Vrabel will be a coordinator at some point, which is why they made some of the coaching moves that they did this past offseason. Also mentioned that he thinks Steno is future head coach candidate. We'll see if either of those things happen, but spoke very glowingly of both individuals. Mark Murphy's, little press conference thing was noteworthy, but we sort of, I guess, talked about it all already. He talked about Brazil, which we talked about the city of Green Bay situation, which we talked about the kick return rule, which we talked about. He did also mention he was very pleased with Jordan Love and also very pleased with Matt LaFleur, Brian Gutekunst, and Russ Ball with the job that they have done with the team, with the roster, and specifically with Jordan Love as well. Meanwhile, maybe, just maybe, get to know the name Luis Rhys-Zamet, an international pathway program player who is eligible to sign with a team at any time. He's a former rugby player. He ran a 4.43 40, 6.3 209, was extremely dynamic on the rugby field. The thought is that he's going to be a potential running back wide receiver hybrid. Some people asking about, well, what about Kenneth Odemegwu? Kenneth Odemegwu's international pathway program situation is done and over with. Now, they did sign him to the 90-man roster, so he is still on the roster, but they do not get that specific international pathway program exemption for Kenneth Odemegwu anymore. If he's going to make the team, he needs to make the team either on the active roster or on the practice squad. They don't get an exception for him. If they were to go out and sign Luis Rhys-Zamet, they would be able to add him to the international pathway program. They would get that extra practice squad spot, and it would be a add to the roster for Green Bay. This is a really fun player if you watch him. This is one that I think actually might have a chance to, maybe at some point make a roster with a little bit of development. He's a really big time athlete, and you watch some of the stuff he did on the rugby field, it's pretty fun. The reason we bring this up is he does have a visit coming up with Green Bay. He's got a couple other visits as well, just signed with Roc Nation as his agent, but he's going to find a team sooner rather than later. Doesn't have to go through the draft process. Green Bay can pick him up at any time if they want to. We will see in the coming days how that visit goes and if Green Bay does pick him up and add him to the roster. Last but not least, Eric Wilson, one-year contract, $1.152 million. Not much of a cap hit, basically a vet minimum deal. He did get a $167,500 signing bonus. This is one of those that there's a really good chance he makes the team on special teams and having his, sort of be a nice depth piece at linebacker. But when you get that little of a signing bonus, what it means is you have to earn your job in training camp. Same as we talked about with AJ Dillon. If they have a ton of competition and the competition's better, Eric Wilson is by no means guaranteed a spot on the roster. Do I expect him to make it? Yeah, pretty much at this point, but we'll see what the draft brings. We'll see what the rest of free agency brings. Based on that contract, he's going to have to earn his job, but that's exactly what you want. You want competition and guys having to go out and earn their job on the 53-man roster. Appreciate you guys so much for joining me today. A crazy, busy, random day in March, end of March, out of absolutely nowhere. Got a few really great episodes coming up. My current plan for tomorrow is Brad Spielberg from PFF, and who is just a genius at contracts and salary cap and all those sort of things. We've got a great conversation lined up, so look forward to that. Shout out to Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Brad Dad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, David Prendergast, and Dan Miller for being Packaday Podcast Hall of Famer All-Pro members. I will see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go!